Hello and welcome to the Worcester Observer podcast. We're sitting on the beach. No, wait, no. It is hot, but we're not on the beach, are we? It's still Redditch. It's still our headquarters in Redditch. I hope you're enjoying the sunshine. If you're not, God help you, because tomorrow it's going to get even hotter.
Well, I'm one of those who just keeps moaning now. I'm too hot, Rob.
Don't you live in California for part of the year?
But you know what?
This must be freezing compared to California.
But you know, in America, I'm always too cold because you just live in air conditioning all the time. Yeah. I'm always that person who's carrying a jumper around with me all the time. And so this is very hot. It's very humid, isn't it?
Very, very warm. And I think we need to log a call with Mother Nature because last night's thunderstorms did not clear the air at all. So I think they were a bit faulty, these thunderstorms.
Yeah, is that what's supposed to happen?
Well, I always thought a thunderstorm cleared the air.
Well, I always thought that you counted one elephant, two elephant, three elephant, and that's how many miles away it was coming towards you. But you just informed me that was not true.
I don't know how true it is. I've always done that growing up. But then he's a friend. I won't name him, but he's a bit boring about all this stuff. If you're listening, I'm not going to name you, but if you're listening, I'm sorry.
Will they know who they are?
I think they might do. They said it's not always scientific because the thunderstorm is never heading directly towards you.
Oh, I've never really thought about that.
Because they can grow in the distance, but they can go round because they don't...
Yeah.
They don't track necessarily, but I think last night's, judging by the thunder and lightning map I saw this morning, I think last night's tracked in a very big way because...
Well, I'm gutted. I missed it. I fell asleep, but...
It was incredibly loud, very bangy. And lots of rain.
Wow.
But then it's a measure of how hot it is that the roads and the pavements this morning were dry by about 9 o'clock.
Do you know at any one time on planet Earth how many thunderstorms are going on at any one time?
No, but if you do, I will be very impressed.
Well, no, this was a question. This was an answer in one of the general knowledge quizzes I went to a few weeks ago. And basically you had to guess, like the nearest person to guess. And I guessed about 10 or something. But the answer is something like 15,000 or something.
Wow.
Any one time there are thunderstorms going on all over the planet. Isn't that incredible?
That is incredible. I mean, yes, the world's a big place, but 15,000...
I know, I was thinking maybe one every continent, couple every continent. 10, let's say.
The rainy season in Asia or something. Yeah,
but it's crazy.
Well, it is very, very hot. So hopefully you can do what I've been doing the last two nights. Listen to the podcast in the garden or something. That's what I've been doing. I was up till midnight last night sitting in the garden because it was so warm.
Well, you'll even be able to hear us on TV now. Now we're on
TV,
YouTube.
Yes, we're on YouTube as well. We're TV stars and we're branching out all the time and we'll get to... Branching out. How further are we going to branch out in the future?
BBC One next?
No, they're a bit busy today. Apparently there's something going on in London today, some announcement about a Prime Minister or something.
Oh, that leads you on nicely to your top story this week.
It's not just thrown together, this.
Well planned.
It's chucked together. as we do, we take you through some of the stories you'll be reading on worcesterobserver.co.uk and hopefully the paper as well. And certainly the day as we record this Wednesday, Boris Johnson it's about 2:05 now, so I think he's close to being on the way to see Her Majesty. And this gets me really picky, where he will be asked to be Prime Minister, because at the moment he is not Prime Minister, he's the Conservative Party leader.
That's right, isn't it? Because the Queen has to say, would you please form a government or something?
Or, you know, good luck, you're going to need it.
I have faith in him.
But no, I just think the Queen might just go, another one, I've got to see another one.
She must get fed up with it, mustn't
she? Yeah, I had 10 years where I saw Blair once a week, I didn't have to worry about it. Then Brown for a while. And Cameron did 6 years, and now I'm seeing a new Prime Minister every week.
So is it true that every single Monday morning or something, she meets them? She has an hour?
I have no idea when it is, but yeah, they do.
Amazing.
The Prime Minister always has an audience with Her Majesty. And for her age, she's on top of everything.
Oh, she's very switched on.
Because you never find out what's said, but things get leaked out. And certainly former Prime Ministers have always said, you know, you can't just... ride roughshod over her or just say, because she knows everything.
Yeah.
I just think she's incredible.
And I do.
What she makes of when Boris Johnson walks through the door will be very interesting. But let's catch you up if you have been on Planet Zog or been sunbathing for the last 24 hours. Boris obviously became leader. 92,153 votes to Jeremy Hunt's 56,656 votes, and more than 2-1 majority, and 66% of the vote, which negates the first problem Boris would have had, was mandate. If it was close, it would have led, the members aren't so sure now. That's clear, it's decisive.
Right.
He has the mandate. One person who doesn't believe he has a mandate, though, is a young teenager who became one of the youngest ever members of the Conservative Party when he joined the party at the age of 12. Mm. Yes, 12, that's 1-2. Adam Lawless, and we publicised it in the paper 3 years ago now, joined the Conservative Party in Worcester when he was a 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
He canvassed, he worked with a local association, but dramatically, he's ripped up his membership card. He wants nothing more to do with it.
Because of Boris?
With a deep regret, he couldn't stomach the thought of Boris Johnson as leader of the party. He disagrees with the direction the party is heading, and the belief and blind optimism towards a no-deal Brexit is damaging the ideology and simply ruins the credibility of the Conservative Party. That's according to Adam. And he also lavishes quite a detailed criticism on Boris Johnson, that he's bombastic and lacks detail. However, before you run to the conclusion that some on social media have seen, and you're right to have an opinion, I'm not criticising, Adam supported the Brexit deal Theresa May put together.
Right.
And actually encouraged people to vote for it and to take for Britain to leave. So this is not the last actor of a Remainer that wants to leave.
This is like he just doesn't like Boris, basically. Why is Boris such a Marmite character? Like Trump, you either love them or you hate them. He's one of those, isn't he?
I think he's a character. And I think, as a nation, and I think this goes to the Americans a little bit as well. You'd know more about it than me, having lived there, but I think we tend to sort of manufacture politicians. They come out with a certain style and they're this, that and the other. And when somebody's different, like Trump, like Johnson, I think the natural instinct when it comes out of a politician, when it's someone else, a TV personality, and they've got a lot of character, we're like, oh, he makes me laugh, or oh, I can't really like him. When it's a politician, it seems to be cranked up to 10, and it's like, I really, really hate him, or I really, really like him.
I can understand the whole disliking Trump, but I don't understand the disliking Boris. I just think he comes across really, I don't know, so charismatic. And
he's charismatic. He is charismatic. I think a lot of it came with the fact that he clearly wrote two articles when Brexit was formulated, one saying, well, Dave, my mate Dave's right, we should stay in the EU, and the other article was we should leave the EU, and then he sent that one to his sub-editor and became the face of Brexit. I think that hammered a lot of nails into his coffin with a lot of people.
Right, yeah.
I've always been somebody that judged them on what they do.
Yeah, I mean, he did do an amazing job in London.
He did do a good job in London.
We will see, won't we?
And we will see, because I think it's going to be different. It's going to be different. Adam has left. He praised the Worcester. We should say he lavished praise on the local Conservative Association and the city's MP, Robin Walker.
I like what Robin said. He's a very bright and enthusiastic young man. But he'd be very happy to sit down and explain how important it is now for us all to come together, basically. What a great response.
I think so. We seem to be, and it's a double-edged sword because the parties themselves are guilty of it. No political party has one view. The most successful parties are a broad church of opinion. You know, not everybody bought into Tony Blair's vision of the Labour Party. Jeremy Corbyn, for one, didn't buy into it. But political parties are broad churches. If you believe in the central strand, but then your personal beliefs veer off slightly, but there's still a home for you, it's a successful party.
Yeah, exactly.
And I get what Robin is on about. I think there are a lot of people that won't like and stomach that Boris Johnson is the Conservative leader, and indeed there are MPs resigning from the cabinet, but
don't you think they were a bit cowardly, though, the ones who did just, I mean, they jumped before they were pushed, basically, weren't they? All those who were really mean about Boris on the...
To be honest, it's clear he was going to change the cabinet radically. I think we will see very radical changes.
When will we find out all those changes?
Allegedly, from what I've been reading last night and first thing this morning before I enjoyed the coldest shower I've ever had in my life to cool down, I think we're going to see he's going to the palace, confirmed as Prime Minister, and I think we're looking late afternoon, early evening, I think.
Oh, right, that soon. Okay.
I think he'll want, because he wants to hit the ground running, and the longer you delay your cabinet reshuffle, or your appointment, it's not a reshuffle, obviously, it's the appointment of a new cabinet. The longer you delay it, the more... It didn't work for Theresa May. I mean, she strung hers out over an entire weekend.
Right.
And I think the media, us in the media, were a little bit bored, because it was like, we'd rather have one announcement after another and then we can digest it and present it.
Right.
I expect Sajid Javid to be named Chancellor.
Oh, I hope he is. We love Sajid here, don't
allegedly,
we?
Allegedly, he walked into the 1922 committee, the meeting of the Conservative Party backbenchers, with Boris last night. They walked in together. Not hand in hand, I don't think, but they walked in together.
Well, Sajid has always been really... He's a charming man. He was very charming about all of Boris's policies, and I think the feeling's mutual. I mean, Boris has already said that he wants to take on Sajid's idea of 20,000 more police officers on the streets and things like that. I think they'd work really well together.
I think they would, and I think it would be a... I mean, it's a Thatcherite step. Sajid is a proud Thatcherite, a child of Thatcher, and a belief in what Margaret Thatcher, the late Margaret Thatcher, I should say Baroness Thatcher, she died a baronessa, but want the vision for the country. And I think Boris, I'm not sure. I mean, there's Blairism, Cameronism. I don't think there's Borisism. I don't think there's a core strand of what Boris believes.
I've read a lot of his books, and he's very into small government. He doesn't like government running everything. He believes in the individual. Very into that. He doesn't... which is kind of Churchillian, isn't it? That's what Churchill often said. And I think, obviously, he got that from Churchill, because he's Churchill's biggest fan, isn't he?
He is, allegedly. I mean, I think there's five core things in his in-tray. I've tried to narrow it down to five for the purpose of the podcast. It was very difficult. Obviously, number one is that B word, Brexit. I won't go backwards and forwards because I think we've debated Brexit enough. He has got to resolve it one way or the other. The patience is wearing thin. The numbers are not there. No deal unless the preparations are stepped up massively is not a possibility. So it has to be resolved one way or another. He either seeks a general election and then uses his campaign powers to say, if you want Brexit, you don't vote for a Brexit party, you don't vote for UKIP, you don't even vote Labour, you vote for the Conservative Party, because if you put us as a majority, I can get it over the line. If you don't...
Why aren't you in politics, Rob? What you're saying all just makes massive sense, and you explain it so well. They often don't explain it to us like this.
Or he has to take it off the table and tell the British people. I think now there's a desire for it to be done, but I think there's a desire for honesty. And I think he has got... And you know I'm a Remainer, and I'm not saying this because I just want it over and I want it Remain. I think he's got the charisma to say, it doesn't work, we haven't got a deal... I don't want to risk... We're not ready for no deal, so I'm revoking it, but it doesn't mean to say we're staying forever. Because I think he could be a very difficult... And I think he's got people around him that could be very difficult people to go to Brussels and say, just because we've revoked it, don't mean to say we're back in love. We might be staying together just for the sake of the kids.
But I think, the whole country would be up in arms, wouldn't they? I
think there would be anger, but I think if it was... If it was explained that it's a dead end, and I think if he came to a dead end and realised he couldn't do it and put it to a general election, I think he's got the charisma, as you said, to campaign and say, yes, we've let you down, and almost wash his hands and say, the others let you down. Give me a chance. Let's see where it goes with me. I think he's got the charisma to take Conservative Party forward. I don't know, but I think... The most important thing is resolution.
Where does our MP, Robin Walker, stand on all this? Has he been very vocal about whether he supports Boris or...? Have we heard from him?
When the leadership election was announced, Robin was very pro-Sajid.
Right.
And came out and actually said he would support Sajid. And did so, and he was very, very photoed with him. And I think a lot of the Worcestershire MPs back Sajid because of the localness and because they deal with him on a day-to-day basis. Who he voted for in the final two, that I don't know.
Mm.
Where he stands, I mean, he's a Remainer. He campaigned for Remain and stood on the streets of Worcester saying that Brexit would be a disaster for Worcester, but then took a job in the Brexit Ministry. Is the longest serving Brexit minister. No one else has done any as long as Robin has because they all resigned.
Oh, wow.
Where he stands, we just don't know.
No.
It may be Boris rewards him for his loyalty and keeps him there. Mm. It may be he wants to clean house in the Brexit department and have Brexiteers running the Brexit department.
And so this weekend, today, tomorrow, Boris will be putting together his cabinet. We should find out, hopefully, maybe later today. But then do they all go on holiday for a month?
Parliament will rise tomorrow until September the 3rd, yeah.
Do you reckon, if I was Boris, I'd go, right, guys, I'll appoint you, but we're not having a holiday this year. We're working on Brexit. Do you think he might do that?
No, I think because if Parliament rises, he hasn't got to go to Prime Minister's questions. He hasn't got to make statements. He can beaver away.
Oh, is that the... So they can still carry on working?
Yeah, they're not
like they're all off to the Caribbean.
And he's already said he's not taking a holiday till Brexit's done.
Right,
which worries me slightly because anybody in a position of authority needs a break.
Mm.
And I admire the enthusiasm, but the only clear thinking will come when you're refreshed and don't go down the rabbit hole of physical and mental exhaustion.
They all age massively, don't they, when they're PM?
They all do. I mean, I think there was a piece I read, there was a picture of Tony Blair taking office and leaving office, and you could tell the stress of it all. And Theresa May is the same.
Theresa May
that took office compared to the Theresa May today, two very different women.
Oh, that was only 3 years ago.
And that was 3 years. Would I do it? Not for any money in the world. You could pay me the king's ransom. I would never do it.
Mm.
Because it all falls on your head. But I admire anybody that does.
Yeah, and I've seen how hard our local MPs work. I mean, just reading all the stories that you guys put in the papers every week, and we follow them around religiously, don't we, really?
Yeah, we do.
And I can't believe how many... They open events, they're at every meeting, every
town. Your life is not your own.
Yeah, they live for us, don't they?
Your life is not your own. And that gets me to my second point, really, on Boris Johnson's intro. He's got to... The next challenge, he's got to be comfortable now by people asking questions about his private life.
Mm.
And he's got to come up with an answer. He's the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. If he's had a row with his girlfriend, he needs to be upfront and honest and do it in the way that Boris gets it over, with humour, you know, and say, yes, it was... And openness, honesty, because people will empathise, people will understand.
Yeah.
The secrecy and the, oh, well, this is a Remainer plot, will help nobody.
Mm. No, that's a very good point. Yeah.
Thirdly, he needs... What worries me is that it's all Brexit, Brexit, Brexit. We need a leader that will say it's Brexit, but the here and now is important. There's domestic policies that need to be done. Mm. For a start, he could be the Prime Minister that brings power back to Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland hasn't had an assembly now for gone 2 years, I think.
Mm. They've got that beautiful building just sitting there, haven't they? So.
It needs doing, but he needs a policy. But he also needs, as Nigel Evans said yesterday, he needs to watch the knives. Number four, watch the knives in your front. Because he walks into Downing Street this evening, not with the knives in his back, they're in his front.
Mm.
And there are people waiting in the wings to bring him down. And that's the most danger. And the best thing he could do, phone Jeremy Hunt this morning and say, Foreign Secretary, yours if you want it.
I liked the way Jeremy seemed so... He lost well,
dignified,
didn't he?
Dignified.
Yeah, very dignified.
And finally, most important thing, don't be the predecessor. Don't be Theresa May.
I don't think there's any chance of that.
When you speak in public, when you need the lectern moment, make it from moments of national importance. The lectern in Downing Street or the Prime Ministerial Statement was only ever reserved for this is something the nation needs to know and they need to know it now.
Mm.
Whereas under Theresa May, it was, I'm sort of having the negotiations in public.
That's very true.
The lectern needs to be moments of national importance, a
and
general
Boris
election.
Will be good at doing that.
He
writes incredible speeches. When he's an amazing orator. When he's prepared and he's... I mean, he's a journalist, isn't he?
He's a journalist.
He was a fantastic journalist. He can write. He can write well. It's when he's put on the spot. And you're right about answering the questions. And I think you're very right as well about how the public will have empathy with him if he answers those personal questions.
He wants to keep things private, and that's understandable. And the media will let him. You look at the prime ministers that have had children in Downing Street, for example. That's been kept out of the public eye.
Yeah.
There will be things kept out, but you can't not acknowledge he has a partner. He can't not acknowledge he's getting divorced.
Will she move into Downing Street with him?
We don't know.
I always think you have all the answers, Rob, you see. This is why I just ask you all these questions.
This is why you're wrong. it's a seismic day. We'll know more as the day progresses, and I'm sure as by the time you listen to this podcast, things would have developed much more. But we have a new Prime Minister. Where it leads us, God only knows, Gavner. That's my best Cockney accent to do. I just want to touch on, I'm sure many of you have seen it, but this Star Wars exhibition that has started at the Worcester City Art Gallery and Museum. We mentioned it on the podcast last week. Was it last week or the week before? I don't know. We mentioned it, but we've got some great photos online. Do go online. All I'll say is the Mayor of Worcester is wielding a lightsaber to open the... thing.
That's
a stroke of
genius, isn't it?
The picture looks...
He cuts the ribbon with his lightsaber.
Picture looks as good as you think it is. I'll describe it as that. So do go there. It's there for the whole summer. If you're a Star Wars fan, go. Even if you're not, some of the exhibits look absolutely amazing. And that's right in the heart of the city on Foregate Street. Get yourself down there. Visit museumsworcestershire.org.uk for all the more information. All the information's on there. It's terrific, terrific edition. And what great timing to have a Star Wars exhibition during the school summer holidays, so kids now can just go, oh, that's Dad's old toys.
Brilliant.
And keeping it in the political theme, sorry, it's been very political heavy, but this is the news it is this week. There's a climate emergency now in Worcester. The Green Party was successful with their calls for a declaration of a climate emergency and a bid to make Worcester carbon neutral by 2013. Neil Lawrenson put the bid forward and won support of the Labour councillors to be declared, and for a bid for Worcester to be carbon neutral to reduce the impact on climate change by 2030. The Conservatives, I should say, asked for it to be extended to 2050, believing it's not possible. But that was voted down.
What does carbon neutral mean? How can we be carbon neutral? We'll still be driving cars, won't we?
But if we have offsets, if we're doing everything offset, and so our use of carbon is balanced out by the thing...
Planting trees,
etc. Okay. If we're carbon neutral, we're not producing excess carbon, and that reduces climate change, apparently. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry, I don't fully understand all the science behind it, but that's the crib sort of notes that I have of it. I've no doubt that climate change is real. Mm. I'm not a denier for one bit, and I think we should look after Mother Earth and what we've been given. And I've no doubt it's a very real thing. Where I have a problem is that it's becoming the national discourse.
Yeah.
That we're talking about that and Brexit.
Mm.
And I was... struck that, I know, councillors can debate what they want, and I'm not going to decry the Green councillors that do a fine job, because there's only three Green councillors. To make their voice heard is phenomenal, and what they have done in Worcester, we've had Louis Stephen, I'm sure you know, on the podcast, what they've done in Worcester is phenomenal. Where I draw the line, though, is that last Tuesday, the City Council met for the last time. Now it's July the 16th. Mm-hmm. They will not meet again as a city council until October the 22nd, That is nearly, that's 3.5 months.
Oh, this was your editor's comment this week, right?
Indeed.
So, are we calling them up on this? Are we saying what's going on?
I'm calling them out ever so slightly because for over an hour, there were debates on climate change.
Hmm.
I've no doubt before anybody criticises me, I've no doubt climate change is real. I have no doubt it's the biggest danger to our planet.
But they're all saying it needs to happen now, and then they go off for 3 months. Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is that there were two motions. The Green Party put one and the Labour Party put one.
Mm-hmm.
They felt like one and the same. But we were debating that for over an hour. The both motions ran to about an hour, roughly. It may have been 50-odd minutes, but the debates lasted over an hour. It needs decisive action, but it doesn't. Whatever Worcester or any local council, any city, any town, any village, whatever they do on their own means nothing.
Mm.
Because it's a worldwide problem and the world needs to get together because Britain could lead the way.
Well, this is what I get really upset with Germany about because Germany, especially in Europe, they seem to put themselves on the pedestal of telling everyone else what to do. And you realise they are still building coal power stations every single week. And China. And I just find it so hypocritical.
But we have the debate for over an hour. And I've no doubt that if we all did it. And I get the point that the things that are put to me by Greenly-leaning people, that, yes, but it's a collective action if we do it, and then it's a domino effect. I get that.
Mm.
But to tackle this, you need the worldwide solution. If China and Germany, as you say, are producing these coal plants...
Yeah, and China is...
The world is still getting polluted.
China is doing it at the most rapid ever, apparently. They're building more than they've ever built before. What we all need to do is we all need to stop buying Chinese products. We all need to throw, not buy iPhones or something, because it's the only way we're going to teach them, isn't it?
Well,
we need to teach them a lesson somehow.
I just take a great issue that an hour of the time was spent on that. Three things for one. That just sounds rubbish, Rob. That really does. three things that I wondered that weren't being debated whilst I was in the meeting. The traffic on City Walls Road.
Hmm.
That part of Worcester now, because they're working on the lights, it's frequently gridlocked. I've seen pictures of City Walls Road at 8 o'clock of a night and the cars are nose to tail, like rush hour. Oh, 8 o'clock at night.
I do a photography course on Wednesday evenings and I've been stuck in traffic for at least half an hour. It's taken me to get through. It's incredible. Yeah.
Secondly, homelessness.
Hmm.
Where's the motion saying the City Council needs to do more to work with rough sleepers? Is there enough money going into the services looking after our rough sleepers?
Mm.
Looking to find them a hostel? Can we put more beds in? And thirdly, most importantly, Sabrina Bridge, in the last 9 months, Tom Jones walked over it before he went to his death, in however he went to his death. This young man, Alessandro Fremenzi, fell off the bridge. Could a city councillor, if they're listening, put together a motion and say, is there anything we can do around Sabrina Bridge? Is there improved CCTV for early detection if we can spot somebody in trouble? But we spent an hour on climate change. Sometimes it gets my goat that we're looking so far into the future, we're ignoring what's under
what's
our nose.
What's happening right now, yeah. And so what were they talking about? What parts of climate change were they talking about?
Worcester to be carbon neutral, a green plan to do this, to that. They're all good strategies and we're making huge leaps forward in Worcester. We are. But it matters not if we keep talking about it and keep putting these... At times, I'm going to say, it may upset a few of you, but at times these politicised motions that we want to be seen to doing everything... Politics won't solve climate change, people will.
Yeah.
Education will. You stop lecturing people and start educating people. Mm. I'm one of those that want to listen. I don't want to be lectured to. I don't want something blocked. I don't want a road blocked because people have got to take action. I want education. What can I do? What can I do as a small individual to make a difference?
I always thought when I was at school, I always wished there'd be like a class on life skills, like setting up a bank account and, you know, managing finances and doing this and just general stuff.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that in schools they should have just a lesson on looking after our planet and making the world a better place. I think that would be incredible to have.
Educate the next generation so they're equipped and ready. But educate us as well, you and me.
Yeah.
Are there things we can do better?
Absolutely.
I've said, and I've bored people to tears with it, I've often said the biggest change we could do is make manufacturers put all on their food boxes, tins, whatever, is it recyclable or not? Take the doubt away. Mm-hmm. I've stood in my kitchen. Can I recycle that? Oh, it is cardboard, but it's very thick. Take it all away. Make it a law. Print it on all things saying this is recyclable.
Yeah, absolutely. And use environmentally friendly products. I get so upset the number of people in this country who just pour bleach down their toilets and bleach on their, you know, sinks and things. And that all is just going into our oceans eventually and poisoning our fish and everything. And there are products out there which aren't massively more expensive and they work just as well. So I'm passionate about that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right, well, I think we'd best both step off our soapboxes.
They needed us in that meeting, didn't they? Well, they had you, but if that had been there too, we could have over.
Yes, we would have launched a coup. No, let's step off the soapbox before things get too militant. Just want to round up a bit of sport. And just wish Matt Newby, the new head coach of the Worcester Wolves basketball team, all the very luck in the world. He's the new head coach for the Wolfpack, so he's the new leader of the Wolfpack,
amazing,
if you will.
Have you ever been to one of their games?
No, I haven't yet.
I want to go.
This season.
I'd love to go.
And also the Seven Stars, the netball team, they've appointed Melissa Bessel. I hope I've said that right. If I haven't, please do correct me. As their new head coach for the Vitality Netball Super League franchise, which is, of course, shared between the University of Worcester and the University of Gloucestershire as well. She's a New Zealander and her country won the Netball World Cup.
Amazing.
So Seven Stars have pulled off a bit of a coup there, I think. And good for New Zealand that they've had success in one sporting tournament. Anyway,
we've got a couple of questions for you again the editor. Yeah, if you have a question to ask Rob, our editor, do get in touch with us. You can email him, editor@worcesterobserver.co.uk, or get in touch with us on Facebook or Twitter or even Instagram, etc. And I'll put the questions to him. But this week...
She likes this bit.
We've heard from Charlotte Stern, who's from Malvern, apparently, and she says... Rob, as editor of the local paper, do you have to stay impartial with your views on politics, etc., or are local newspapers the same as national press and take sides?
Charlotte, that's a brilliant question and one we get asked a lot. We don't get asked a lot. People assume we're like the nationals. I would say to you in response, yes, we're impartial. We take both sides.
Not on this podcast, we're not.
Not on this podcast, no. But I think in terms of the stories, we're impartial because politics is a two-way street. One side, the blue corner will say one thing, the red corner will say the other. And certainly as editor, I've always striven. I've always strived to put both sides of the point because I think my readers in Worcester and Malvern will make their own opinion because I think we've got some of the best and highly engaged residents that will make their own minds, that don't get pandered to, that won't be pandered to, that they will read and they will look at it and then they'll make their judgment. So we're impartial, but at the same time, I've always been open about my credentials. My political credentials are easily accessible. I'm happy to discuss them with anybody. I was raised in a Labour household. When I first got the vote in 2001, I voted Labour. I voted Lib Dem in 2005 to oppose because I opposed the Iraq War, and since then I've gone between Labour, Lib Dem, and the Conservative. I'm not now a voter. I've criticised Corbyn. I've praised Corbyn. I've criticised Theresa May. I've praised Theresa May. I've no doubt will criticise Boris Johnson, and no doubt I'll praise Boris Johnson. But I think it's important as well as the paper being impartial, I think it's important that the readers know where I am. So you can perhaps, in my editor's comments, if I'm too parochial, you'll maybe be able to go, oh yes, but he is like that. But that's my little corner. That's
you know you're impartial when you get letters from both sides saying, hey, you're so pro-Brexit and hey, you're so pro-Remain. Yeah. And we do get letters like that, don't we?
Well, brilliantly the other day on Evesham paper, it was a letter that I couldn't print because it contained quite a lot of invective towards me personally. But I was accused of being a Brexiteer.
There you go.
And I thought, well, I must be doing the job right then because there isn't a Brexit bone in my body. But no, we're very impartial. But what I would say, Charlotte, keep reading the Nationals, but read them through the prism that you know that they are Conservative-leaning or Labour-leaning. Mm. But keep reading them because there's good journalism there.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean to say, you know, if something is bad, they will call it out. The Telegraph, for example, when Theresa May resigned, the Telegraph, which is the Tory Bible in many ways, they never held back from criticising her as one of the worst prime ministers. Mm. So they will still criticise, but they will just have a slant. But I think it's important to carry on reading the papers. But now, hopefully, your Worcester Observer is impartial. If it isn't, you know where to come and you know where to call.
Well, you're definitely pleasing somebody because we've also had a letter from Simon Harris. He doesn't say where he's from, but I assume Worcester because he receives the Observer. And he said, hi, Rob, loved the podcast last week. I just wanted to ask a question thanks. About the future of local papers. We really enjoy getting our Observer through the door each week. It won't all go online, will it? Please keep up the great work and quality journalism in the Observer. It's a great read each week. Simon Harris. Nice,
Simon Harris. Well, Simon Harris, you're making me blush now. I'm glad we're not no longer videoing these because I'm going blush, whether it are that or it's hot or not. Ah, that might be a question that we can both answer, really. I mean, as you know, Claire's family run the newspapers. I believe that we're not going fully online.
No, I mean, I'm passionate about local press. I have a lot to do with the news media organisation in London, and they're constantly trying to keep press alive because it's so important. I think without local press, you know, people, you guys listening out there, you lose your voice. Mm. You know, council meetings aren't covered. It's so much, and I just think it's so important that we can't just go online. I think, I mean, it's going more and more online, isn't it?
I think it is, but I always remember I had a lecturer at university. This is when the internet was starting because I went to university so many years ago as an old man. I had a lecturer at university and the internet was really beginning to take hold when I was at university and begin to sort of come into the news and the media industry. And he forecasted it, and he was brilliant, and I hold him true to this day, that the internet will revolutionise journalism because anyone can be a journalist. But most importantly, those that think the newspaper is the be-all and end-all will die. Mm. And certainly, being an editor now compared to 30 years ago, you know, the editors of 30 years ago, people whose footsteps, albeit marginally, I walk in, very fine traditional editors of the past, you know, the greats of our industry, they only had to worry about getting a paper out the following morning. And the following evening, we've had evening press as well. Now, the job of an editor now is
24/7, isn't it?
24/7. It's, can we get a paper out? Is the website updated? Are we breaking the
And we're doing
story.
More than ever on social media. And we're also now moving on to YouTube.
Yeah.
And so we're going to hopefully have our own little TV channels
Indeed.
On there. But it's all going. But I think having a paper through the door, there is still room for it in this world at the moment, for
I
sure.
Think so.
And it's so important a lot for our elderly people who might not be on the line. And also our papers. We mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, but all our papers are environmentally friendly. They're grown from a special crop of trees, which actually are planted like crops, and they produce the most oxygen when they're growing, when they're young, and then they're replanted. We pay a little bit extra to have this sort of paper, so we're not damaging the environment or anything.
No, very important.
That is important, especially in light of what we've talked about today. But we want to be around for a long, long time, and obviously, we are doing a lot more online. But we definitely still want to keep the paper going, and we feel it's very important.
Yeah, and I think actually the written press has led the way in the plurality of choice.
Mm.
I think the newspaper industry got onto people wanting different outlets quicker than TV. And I think the only problem is TV has slightly overtaken us now. Mm. Because as much as a decade ago, you had your terrestrial and then you paid for Sky, you paid for cable. Now it's Netflix, it's ITV Hub, it's BritBox, what ITV and BBC are going to come together to do. It's even YouTube, you can watch whole episodes of things on YouTube. And I've missed somebody out. Netflix, there's another, Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah.
As well. I think what we're offering now is a plurality of choice.
Mm.
That you don't have to wait till Wednesday to get your paper. You can, if there's news breaking in Worcester, it's online. If you don't go straight to our website, it's coming up as a Facebook alert, a Twitter alert, an Instagram post.
Mm-hmm.
I think online, I don't think will ever be truly the answer.
No.
I think the more we can offer in choice-wise will be.
But also online, I find myself, I check news sources, because if it's not written by a reputable paper or establishment, I don't trust it. And I think a lot of what you read online is very badly written, or it's fake news, But when it's written by a qualified journalist like you, or like The Telegraph, or like The Guardian, or something, it's written by a journalist, and it. As newspapers, I think we're gatekeepers for the truth.
Yeah, and we have to move with the times. It would be very easy to put our heads in the oven. Mm-hmm. Not the oven, I don't mean that, in the sand. We put our heads in the sand and say, oh, it's all moving a bit too fast. I think if you don't adapt, you die.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've done well, and we're growing all the time. I mean, I'm really, really proud that this year so far, we're into July, and month on month, our visitor numbers on WorcesterObserver.co.uk are better than every month last year so far.
Yeah.
We're growing and growing and growing.
And 4,000 of you have just joined our Instagram page as well, which has live news updates all day, every day.
But it's fascinating to know that I'm a convert towards online and digital. And when Claire approached me to set this up, in addition to what we're doing with our Bromsgrove and Redditch, I jumped on board because it's another strand to the newspaper. And at times, this is going to sound really old-fashioned, like I don't know anything about technology, but at times it still really, really fascinates me, the response you get to a story if you can get the information and put it online quickly.
Mm.
We can just get, there's an incident at X, you do your job, you phone the ambulance service, you phone the police service, or sometimes you just ring the ambulance service and get the story on there.
Mm-hmm.
The immediacy, and I think that's what people crave. If I'm wrong, then do challenge me, but I think people, they want to know it now, and they want to know it quickly.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the breaking news culture, but I think that's the good part of the breaking news culture. At times, you should wait. Sometimes there's no harm in waiting.
To get all the facts, especially.
To get all the facts, yeah. Because it'll still be news in 10 minutes' time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's better just to get the facts sorted and get it online, because then you avoid corrections, you avoid... and if you can... So if it takes just a tad longer, it's still breaking news. The immediacy that concerns me at times, the rush to broadcast it, and I think this was started by our cousins in the television industry.
Mm-hmm.
The breaking news culture, certainly Sky, it's not a criticism at all, but I think when Sky came on the thing and breaking news was on the TV screen behind the anchormen, and we're getting reports of this, sometimes it was like, well, it's still going to be breaking news 5 minutes from now.
Mm.
Is there one more phone call that could be ascertained?
And clarify the story, yeah.
But no, I don't think the future's ever online. I think it's a family, it's a group, and I think it's as wider offering as we can do. And I think we lead the way, and I think we do a very, very good job.
Yeah, and thank you for the kind words, Simon.
Yes,
Harris.
Simon, thank you very much. You've made me blush. but thank you very much indeed.
Brilliant.
Am I in the hot seat anymore?
No, that's it. I'm trying to get 2 questions a week. I think any more would be a little bit too much, wouldn't it? But who knows? But send in your questions to us.
It's like Prime Minister's questions.
Exactly, yeah. It's interesting. I'm learning stuff. I love it. Yeah.
I think it's fantastic. And thank you all so far for getting on board. Any question you want to ask, do get in touch. But in the spirit of finding out more, we need to find out more what's going on in the hot and sultry Worcester over the next 7 days. And here's Claire's What's on Worcester Road.
You're listening to the Worcester Observer podcast because you have impeccable taste.
Thanks, Rob. Yes, we've got some fun things happening over the weekend, but we'll start on Thursday, that's the 25th of July. We've got a Midsummer Night's Dream happening at Longlands Farm in the Whitbourne Estate in Worcester. This is an Odd Socks production, and this is actually their 30th anniversary year, and yet another high-energy feel-good family theatre show. Every year, Odd Socks delight audiences with their inspired approach to Shakespeare's plays and their trademark interactive style. Yes, you may just be dragged up on stage. If you don't know your Shakespeare, Odd Socks' modern take on Midsummer Night's Dream is all about 4 young lovers who run away to a summer festival in the woods to escape the stress of parental expectations at home. But before long, they unwittingly find themselves the subject of tricks played on them with hilarious results. Add to that a troupe of amateur actors hired to play at the festival, and you have the perfect recipe for an evening of hilarious family entertainment. It's going to be a great evening. They're a fantastic production company. Look online on their website, the Odd Socks website, for tickets, or you can give them a call on 0774 703 1701. Also on Thursday, and I'm excited about this one, The Wedding Present are performing at the Mars Bar. Who remembers The Wedding Present from the 90s? They're an amazing band, and these guys have had actually 18 UK top 40 hit singles. Not bad for a band that has, from its inception, stubbornly refused to play the record industry's game. They've always done it their own way. It was back in 1985, apparently, when David Lewis Gedge, who's the lead singer, he boarded a coach in London with 500 records packed into a pair of his mum's suitcases. And in this fashion, the debut single, Go Out and Get 'Em Boy, do you remember that one? It's a really good song. That was how it all started. He collected the records from the pressing plant. He delivered them to the distribution company himself, and the Wedding Present was born. They're a great band. Hopefully see you there on Thursday night at the Mars Bar. Moving on to Friday, the 26th of July, loads of live music gigs happening all over town. The Reflections, they'll be on at the Sociable Beer Company in Worcester. Love that place. Shanghai Shuffle, they're going to be performing at the Cozy Club in Worcester. Great night over at Annie's Burger Shack with the Jericho Jacks, Hip Flask Virgins and Ruben Seabright all performing there. We've got Forever Sabbath. Forever Sabbath are an amazing Black Sabbath tribute band. So if you love your Black Sabbath, definitely don't miss out on them. They're going to be on at the Mars Bar in Worcester on Friday evening. And we've also got Corey's Angels performing at Colwall Park Hotel in Malvern. And we've also got a spoken word evening happening at Paradiddles. It's the Dead Dads Club happening there. And I've never been to one of these. So if you go, let us know what it's like. Send us a review, because maybe we should check it out. But apparently they're really fun events, and lots of poetry and spoken word and lots of inspiring people. So definitely check out Paradiddles on Friday if that's your thing. Then the same can be said for Saturday the 27th of July. Aren't we lucky having so many amazing music venues in town? Big Fat Shorty, they'll be performing at the Virgin Tavern in Worcester on Saturday. There's a poetry evening happening at Worcester Arts Workshop, License to Rhyme. We've got Bandioki with Polka Dot Robot, karaoke and live music at Paradiddles on Saturday. We've also got Groovy Head, great local band there. They're going to be performing at the Worcester Brewing Company on Saturday. We've also got the Ferrets on at the Chestnut, and also a great lineup at the Mars Bar on Saturday night too, with Without Flight, the Powder Poom and the Test Tubes, all great local bands performing there. There's also going to be a fantastic Neil Diamond tribute night going on down at the Cross Keys in Malvern on Saturday night. And my top pick for Saturday, actually, is a Cello Music for Our Times event happening at Elmsley House in Malvern on Saturday. This is Tom Mahone and Chris Long, and an evening of inspiring and intriguing music for cello and piano by these two very fine musicians. We love Elmsley House too. They always make us feel so welcome, and it's just such a delightful place. If you haven't been, do check it out. Moving on to Sunday, the 28th of July, we've got the Film Orchestra Concert Band. They're going to be performing in Priory Park in Malvern from 2:30 p.m. So if you're not doing anything else, take a picnic and head on down there for a lovely afternoon of free music in the gorgeous sunshine. It's also the Bear Fest happening at the Bear and Ragged Staff. It's their Bear Fest Music Festival 2019. And I know the Del Rey Rockets are due to perform there. Maybe some other great live music bands and things. But it's always great fun at the Bear and Ragged Staff. If you haven't been there before, do check them out. And apparently the event is going on all day there on Sunday. So if you have an event going on too, do let us know about it so we can include you in our listings and talk about it on this podcast. Back to you in the studio, Rob.
Thanks, Claire, for the roundup and for being part of this very warm podcast this week. Hopefully it might be rain. Oh, no programming note. I'm on annual leave next week.
Oh, right. Okay.
So somebody else will be in situ.
Okay.
I'm going on taking some time off, but do listen next week. I'm sure whoever is in the hot seat, it may be the star of the Bromsgrove podcast, Mr. Tristan Harris, I don't know.
Where are you off to? Anywhere nice?
We're going to Lowestoft for the week. It's the house right by a beach.
Oh, nice.
Don't interrupt me if you do see me for autographs or anything. I'm entitled to a bribe. No. But no, I will be back in 2 weeks' time. But do listen. I'm sure we'll have a great podcast for you next week. I was lining up a guest, hopefully today, that we could have done a pre-record for, but sadly he was unable to make it across today. But we're going to get him on soon, definitely, because it's a fascinating subject. I won't say any more than that. So for a fortnight, do listen next week. Enjoy the sunshine. Enjoy the break. Thanks, Claire.
Pleasure.
And I'll see you in August. But until then, I think we're done here. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.